Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. We're going to open by talking with my friend, Father Roger Shikri, who is the Major Superior Leader for the Maronite Order of the Blessed Virgin Mary. He hails from Lebanon, and most of you probably know where I'm going with this. Pope Leo XIV recently finished his visit to the Middle East. He went first to Turkey so that he could go to the site of the event of the Council of Nicaea, and then after that he went to Lebanon. Both very biblical, historical places, both significant in the Christian narrative. Lebanon is undergoing a siege. It doesn't have peace in a political sense, and because of that, Christians are facing anywhere from massacre to persecution, and many of them are leaving Lebanon. Many of them have emigrated away from Lebanon, and that's creating a kind of cultural tidal shift in the makeup of the socio-political arena that is Lebanon, because unlike most nations in the Middle East, Lebanon stands as a model for not just dialogue, but also a model for religious plurality and therefore a kind of religious harmony. Muslims, Catholics, and Protestants coexist in Lebanon, driving forward the nation in common good. The recent wars have created a tremendous amount of disparity and therefore lack of peace that has resulted in an upset of this demographic balance. You and I need to talk about this because here in the U.S. we don't understand persecution like this. We go on from there to speak with Dr. Mark Cherry. Medicine and bioethics are going through profound changes in the Western world. These practices that prior generations would have recognized as morally evil and reprehensible have now become central components of modern healthcare. In the process of rejecting its Christian roots, the West has denied the traditional understanding of truth. And that is unfortunately, or fortunately, central to both science and morality. Science, in effect, cannot be done without understanding what objective truth is. To say that science is sufficient by itself is a truth claim that is itself false. It's scientism. So we talk about this with Dr. Mark Cherry. All this after the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Tuesday, December 2nd. It's the feast of St. Chromatius of Aquilaire. Today's news is brought to you by the nonprofit Revive app. Feeling overwhelmed? Talk with a certified spiritual companion on the Revive app. That's R-E-V-I-V, and then the number 3. Pope Leo has landed in Rome following his visit to Turkey and Lebanon. Speaking to young people in Lebanon yesterday, Pope Leo said young people are just what the country needs.
You have a gift that many times we adults seem to have lost. You have hope. You have time. You have more time to dream, to plan, and to do good.
The Holy Father also discussed peace in the region, saying that, quote, forgiveness leads to justice, which is the foundation of peace. Lebanon is 41% Christian, and most of them are Catholic. All eyes are on Tennessee's special House election tonight. The race between Democrat Afton Ben and Republican Matt Van Epps has unexpectedly turned into a tight race, and that has Republicans like Tennessee Congressman Tim Burchett worried.
If Matt Van Epps, a qualified candidate, a district that Trump won by over 15 points, can't carry this thing, we're in trouble.
Democrats are hoping to ride their blue wave after major wins in November's elections. West Virginia Governor Patrick Morrisey says the National Guard member shot near the White House, Staff Sergeant Andrew Wolf, is making progress.
We were told that Andrew was asked if he could hear the nurse who asked the question to give a thumbs up, and he did respond.
Wolf is now out of a medically induced coma. The suspect in last week's shooting was injured in the incident and remains hospitalized, facing first-degree murder and other charges in the death of Wolf's colleague, Army Specialist Sarah Beckstrom. From your Ave Maria Radio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. In light of Pope Leo XIV's return from his recent trip to where the original Council of Nicaea took place, but also Lebanon, I believed it important that you and I be aware of what's going on in Lebanon, what's going on in that part of the world. And joining me to have a conversation about this is Father Roger Shikri. Now, he is the superior of his order, which is the Maronite Order of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And he's from Lebanon. That's his country, the country of his birth. He serves here in Ave Maria University Chapel in Domino's Farms. Father, great to have you on the program. How are you?
Thank you, Marcus. Great to be invited by you and by Ave Maria Radio. As usual, always, you invite me. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Oh, no, very happy to, Father. Now, you and I love the scriptures, and I want to begin there because Lebanon, the cedars of Lebanon are literally some of the most famous bits of lumber, the famous woods. Lebanon is famous in the scriptures. So let's begin there. Let's talk about the biblical significance of Lebanon.
Yes, Lebanon is a biblical country. Lebanon is mentioned over 70 times in the Old Testament, And Lebanon was covered with the trees of the cedars of Lebanon. And we mentioned that King Solomon transported the trees of Lebanon to build the temple in Jerusalem at that time. At that time, they used to transport the trees through rivers and the sea. That's in the Old Testament. So the mountains of Lebanon are a sign of God's majesty and longevity.
When you think about Lebanon as it exists, well, just prior to recent struggles, because of this biblical heritage, it's very clear that God has blessed it in a certain way. It was a land of coexistence. It was flourishing. Tell us a lot about that.
Yes, it's a land of coexistence. And especially now, God blessed the mountains of Lebanon, and to the point of the tradition says that the mountain of Lebanon is his dwelling place.
Yeah.
That's the tradition. It's not like specifically said in the Old Testament.
And Christians, Muslims, they all lived harmoniously. Different versions of Christians lived harmoniously in Lebanon.
Over the centuries, yes. You know, from time to time there was invasions, external invasions. We have to go through. I mean, Lebanon is known for that. Even geographically, we went through many invasions from near and far.
And yet John Paul II, when he visited, he reminds us that Lebanon is still a country with a mission, a message. Just speak to the significance of Lebanon in that part of the world.
Because the importance of Lebanon, the identity of Lebanon is the land of God, the land where people live together peacefully. Mm-hmm. That's the mission, the identity of Lebanon. That's why Lebanon exists.
And its existence continues because it has a, like we mentioned, this tremendous cultural, religious diversity. But even that is under threat.
Yes, unfortunately, it is under threat, but it's not impossible.
Tell us about what's been happening in terms of especially the bombings in Beirut, some of the main reasons why Pope Leo needed to visit Lebanon.
Yeah, Pope Leo was sent by God. You know, when we say the Pope visited Lebanon, that means the Vicar of Christ visited Lebanon. That means Christ himself visited Lebanon for a reason, to strengthen the people and to promote peace. And the church is there. The church is present. So that's why the Pope made a trip, his first trip. You know, he went to Turkey, but Turkey was not visiting a country.
Mm.
You know, it was like targeting, you know, and celebrating the Nicene Council when the council convened in 325. So Lebanon is his first footstep as a visit. And it means something in God's plan. And, you know, according to divine providence.
So he goes there, he speaks with politicians, but then he also goes to the shrine of Saint Charbel, visits Our Lady of Lebanon, he visits the different, you know, the consecrated priests, the religious. He has a purpose. Everything he's doing there has a particular purpose. Tell us what's going on in the mind of the Pope.
Exactly. So he met with the politicians, Muslims and Christians, both, and that to say that the church is present. The church is involved, and the church is not far from the people, is not far. Christ has something to say to our world now, and the Pope delivered that message.
He also engaged in dialogue, right, with other Christians, other Muslims.
Yes. So he met with the politicians upon his arrival. Then he went to St. Charbel Shrine. And here we can say the purpose is prayer, reflection, and meditation. And that's the first pope to visit the shrine of St. Charbel. Then he met with the youth. And then he met with Christian leaders and consecrated people, I mean priests, sisters, nuns, and religious, to strengthen them. And the Basilica of Our Lady of Lebanon was full of life.
It sounds like the Pope is really concerned about trying to foster dialogue for peace, you know, drawing Christians and Muslims to remember that there's a shared common history and heritage that they have in Lebanon, and therefore there shouldn't be infighting.
Exactly. That was before the war. We lived together. We coexisted together. There was no war. I mean, my next door neighbor was a Muslim. And we grew up together, and we lived together. But unfortunately, the war dispersed and divided us. So this division is not real, because we can come back and live together, coexist together.
That is very sad, because the war has really ravaged Lebanon. Can you speak to what's been happening with the Lebanon currency, the economy, jobs, how families are really suffering?
Yes, there has been a process of, misfortune.
Mm.
War, as you said, the currency, the fall of the currency, and Lebanese are leaving the country, whether Christians or Muslims. They're going abroad for a better opportunity, for safety, for security for their children, to continue their life and to form their families. So that's what's happening. That's the peril. Lebanon is being emptied of its inhabitants, of Christians. We used to be 70% of Christians, and now we're down to 30%, if not lower. So that's what's happening with us.
And unfortunately, Christians are either getting killed or they're leaving Lebanon.
Mostly leaving, yes, emigrating.
In doing so, what we're seeing is the cultural landscape of Lebanon is changing drastically.
Drastically, yes, Marcus, yes.
I'm speaking with Father Roger Shekri. He is the major superior leader for his congregation, which are the Maronite Order of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And we're talking about Lebanon, Pope Leo XIV's recent visit to this biblical land, and what we can learn from it, and why you and I as Catholics ought to be aware of the plight of our brothers and sisters in Lebanon. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
Life can be overwhelming, leaving you feeling anxious, alone, or even in despair. That's why the nonprofit Revive app was created, to help you navigate the darkness and discover the light. With Revive, confidential conversations with a certified spiritual companion are always just a tap away. And right now, your first two sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's R-E-V-I-V, and then the number 3. Let them help you find joy in tomorrow.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter, speaking with Father Roger Shakri, who is Major Superior Leader for the Maronite Order of the Blessed Virgin Mary. He hails from Lebanon, and we are having a conversation today about Pope Leo XIV's recent visit to Lebanon. Father, I want to pick up with this theme. We had touched on it earlier, but the port explosion in Beirut. Many people in the United States are probably mildly aware something happened. Can you please share with us details as to what happened and how the local Christian community especially has suffered from it?
That was a big explosion, almost nuclear, like nuclear. I was in Lebanon at the time. Yes, and I was far, but I heard it, and it was something outrageous to experience. So, the explosion, Christians and Muslims, you know, suffered that, not only Christians or not only Muslims. So we share both, all of us, the Lebanese. Now, who did it, who is responsible, we don't know yet.
Yeah.
We're still waiting.
And unfortunately, I'm concerned we're going to keep waiting forever.
By waiting, you know, we grow in the virtue of patience.
You're very right, Father. And so Pope Leo, when he goes to Lebanon, he goes to the site of this explosion.
Yes, and he prayed silently. That's the beauty about it. He prayed silently. And this is his message, that there is no peace without justice.
And this is, you know, him quoting John Paul II, justice without forgiveness. And it is a torturous situation that Lebanon is going through. But as we think about Pope Leo XIV's visit, one of the things we can take away from it also is that Pope Leo really wants to speak a kind of renewed peace, harmony, and restoration of Lebanon.
Yes. Yes, that's the mission of the church. That's always the mission of the church. And as I said, Pope Leo visited Lebanon on behalf of Christ. So Christ is renewing his mission, his teaching to us to live peacefully.
With all the numbers of Christian Lebanese people who've left Lebanon, I want to ask your opinion, Father. Do you think we'll ever see Lebanon return to the kind of religious diversity and harmony that Muslims and Christians once had living there.
You know, Marcus, what's humanly impossible, divinely is possible. Yes, I do believe so. The day we regain peace, we will go to Beirut together.
And you know, those words are truly powerful. They're very salient, Father, and you're completely right. God can restore that. In the process, tell us about what's going on politically in Lebanon, because constitutionally, this is a nation that is made up, even in parliament, it's made up of Christians and Muslims.
And Muslims,
but
yes.
with the diminishing Christian population, what's going on?
With the diminishing, yes, of the Christian population, but we still have, you know, power. I mean, our president mm-hmm. is Maronite Christian, Catholic. Okay? So we still have power. We have the church. We have our patriarch, and we have the bishops. And, Lebanon is still active religiously. We have many vocations, many priests. Many sisters, we have schools, we have institutions, so we have saints. So we have sites, Christian sites, old. I mean, who founded the church in Lebanon? St. Peter. On his way to Antioch, mm-hmm. he made a stop in Lebanon and he started the church. So we are the fruits of St. Peter, and we remain the fruits of St. Peter.
Because of that, Father, I want to ask you to speak about one of the great... St. Rafka is a Lebanese saint as well, right?
She is, yes.
Before we touch on St. Rafka, I want to ask you to speak about St. Shabel Makhlouf, because Pope Leo XIV goes to his shrine, prays, and then consecrates Lebanon and the entire Middle East to St. Charbel's intercession.
Yes, yes, St. Charbel, the silent word of God, a powerful soul, a powerful saint. He pronounced few words, but look what he's doing. He's everywhere. He's performing miracles everywhere. Every day we hear about a new miracle. It's amazing the Lord Jesus is, through the intercession of St. Charbel, is blessing Lebanon and the Middle East still. In spite of what, we're in the middle of the tunnel, it's dark still, but one day the day will shine.
St. Charbel is known for being a miracle worker, and he's also known for his intercession in you know, blessing families, restoring peace. Could you please share with us about St. Rafka and her very powerful witness?
Yes, she suffered a lot physically, and she asked the Lord, she wanted to share his suffering, and he granted her wish. He granted the grace for her to suffer with him, and she did gladly and joyfully, without complaining. Also, she was a silent saint.
Yeah. I mean, these outstanding man and outstanding woman, and so it's no wonder that the Pope consecrates Lebanon to St. Charbel's intercession. He really wants the power of this saint to bring about the restoration of Lebanon that needs to happen. Now, because of this, Father, as we go to the final thoughts on Pope Leo's words when he was in Lebanon, his final address, he wasn't just speaking to Lebanon, he was speaking to many other Middle Eastern nations.
Yes, yes, he was speaking to the Iraqi Kurds, to the Syrians, and to the Jordanians also, Christians, yes.
And what was he trying to say here? There's a common message here. He's really trying to draw them to understand his heart.
Yes, even though we say we are the remnant in the Middle East, but this remnant one day will flourish again.
And that's a very biblical hope.
That's the biblical theology.
It really
we always
is.
Go through ups and downs. When we go through ups, we enjoy going through ups, you know, especially when we're at the summit on top. But when we go through the downs, we have to hold on to faith and to hope.
For everyone listening right now, we don't know what it's like to experience that kind of turmoil, that kind of lack of peace, the war, even the explosion in the port of Beirut. And we certainly don't know what it's like to face real religious persecution. We have issues legally here, but not to the point of real murder for proclaiming the name of Jesus Christ. As a priest, as a man from Lebanon, and therefore as a lover of the people in the Middle East, can you please say a few words to the church in America?
Yes. In Lebanon, we have religious freedom. We go to church. We're not persecuted religiously. But the persecution is social, is political, it's external. We share the same here. Here we go to church and we have the religious freedom. I mean, we're free to practice our religion. We share also the same persecution. Here, persecution is external.
And therefore, we can't take that for granted. I've been talking with Father Roger Shikri. He is the Major Superior Leader of the Maronites of the Blessed Virgin Mary. We've been talking about Pope Leo XIV's recent visit to Lebanon and what you and I can learn from it. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Feeling overwhelmed? Carrying burdens no one else sees? This Giving Tuesday, Ave Maria Radio wants to offer you a gift. On December the 2nd, we're dedicating a special Mass and lifting up the prayer intentions of our radio family. You've helped us proclaim the gospel. Now let us pray for you. Visit AveMariaRadio.net to share your prayer request. December the 2nd, let us lift each other up in hope.
Hello, I'm Marianne Kuharski with Pro-Life Across America. Did you know that a billboard can save a baby's life? When our billboards and radio ads are running, we receive hundreds of calls from those seeking pregnancy information and support. Every caller is connected to a local center offering free ultrasound and confidential counseling. Won't you join us in this life-saving effort? Donate today and help us do more. No gift is too small. That's prolifeacrossamerica.org.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
You remember the time I said on the air, go to confession, and when you're done, go out and have a big ice cream soda. Celebrate. And a man wrote to me, he says, you know, I hadn't gone to confession in 30 years. Do you mind if I went and had a pizza? I said, oh, have 20 pizzas.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
The Holy Eucharist is fulfillment for the present day and a taste of heavenly glory. The Catholic Catechism quotes an ancient prayer of the Church, which says in part, O sacred banquet in which Christ is received as food, the memory of the Passion is renewed, the soul is filled with grace, and a pledge of the life to come is given to us. Jesus pointed this fact out to his apostles at the Last Supper, indicating the fulfillment of his passion, death, and resurrection in the kingdom of God. I tell you, I shall not drink again of the fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. Though we know Christ's real presence is in our midst now, that presence is veiled. So we wait and pray for the day when our Savior comes again and we will see our God as He is. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing our pilgrimage to charming Ireland and its rich Catholic heritage. The shrines are nestled in the quaint Emerald Isle. Lovely people, marvelous food, sweeping vistas. Everyone's favorite is Mass at Our Lady of Knock and its Eucharistic apparition. We hope you can join us in August, along with our Irish chaplain, Father James Conlon.
To learn more about your Ave Maria Radio trip, find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Medicine and bioethics are going through profound changes in the Western world. Practices that prior generations would have recognized as morally impermissible or even reprehensible have become central components of modern healthcare. In the process of rejecting its Christian roots, the West has denied the traditional understanding of truth, the dignity of the human person, both of which are central to science and morality. We explore this issue with Dr. Mark Cherry. Dr. Mark Cherry is the author, most recently, of Bioethics After God, Morality, Culture, and Medicine. He's also Professor of Applied Ethics and Professor of Philosophy at St. Edward's University in Austin, Texas. Mark, it's great to speak with you. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I want to begin with, first off, this is a very insightful book, and I want to thank you for penning it. And I want to begin with the framework with which, the epistemological framework with which we find our modern healthcare professionals operating. We can no longer presuppose that the classical ethos of dignity of the human person or even do no harm are the driving forces for healthcare today.
That's true. One of the challenges for modern healthcare is that we, the dominant intellectual culture, actively shuns God, any other transcendent point orientation. And as a result, it doesn't really understand the ways we might think of things like harm in the same way that might have been historically the case.
Mm-hmm. And that's precisely why when we consider the question of bioethics, today more than ever, it's crucial for those who profess faith in God to be as informed as possible about their health care. If you could please just expound on that issue for us.
So part of what's essential to understand is that in the general secular world we live in, it's not possible through reason all by itself to come to know the nature of the right, the good, the virtuous, and the just, and thereby to understand medicine and medical practices. Like, we live in a culture that is radically at odds with the Christian understandings from the apostles and the fathers. I mean, think of just a few examples, right? It rejects things like the male priesthood. It accepts sex outside of traditional marriage. It teaches what you might call the contraceptive ethos, that sex is primarily for pleasure, not for children, and that most people should at most have maybe one or two children. It affirms third-party assisted reproduction. It accepts abortion as part of responsible reproductive choice. It accepts prenatal diagnosis and then abortion as integral to what it calls responsible parenting. It's moving towards ever greater acceptance of assisted suicide and euthanasia. It talks about things like death with dignity rather than death with repentance and reconciliation. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't live in the world of Western Christianity anymore. Those have radically changed. That's the framework that doctors find themselves working in. And in particular, to traditionally Christian doctors, they'll find themselves in a world that they don't really necessarily recognize.
How much of an influence do you think the collapse of mainline Protestantism from classical morality has on this issue today?
Well, you have to ask maybe which comes first. As the culture is becoming ever more secular,
mm-hmm.
many groups have simply followed along with it.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been changing their understanding of Christianity to track it. So what you refer to as the collapse or the shifting of mainline Protestantism, it sort of depends on the group and how much they've changed. But one finds that within them, they're reinforcing views that are decidedly not Christian.
Right.
So there are at least not traditionally Christian. So there will be reinforcing understandings of life and sexuality and marriage, reproduction and death that are placed within the imminent pleasures of this life rather than focusing on how we're supposed to live, such that we would be orienting ourselves always towards God as best we can.
The unfortunate reality of a post-Christian era means that the objective reality of moral systems simply doesn't have a cultural foothold. And so we find ourselves in this morally pluralistic, diverse, and relativistic culture. In the face of this, what you call, we've seen the development of weak thought and therefore weak theology when it comes to discussions about the human person and their necessary care. Could you please speak to that?
So I use the language of weak thought and weak bioethics as a way to talk about bioethics informed by the stark limits of secular morality.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, only within what reason can show, which isn't much. In order to understand what's wrong with, say, killing, one has to have a content and a framework for understanding when it's acceptable to kill and when it's not acceptable to kill.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of Western culture no longer can see that anymore. And so you have abortion being just sort of normalized as part and parcel of the culture. And again, ever more issues with regard to things like assisted suicide and euthanasia. Countries like Canada, just to use one example, legalized what they called medical assistance in dying,
yeah.
which encompasses both assisted suicide and active euthanasia, which is to say the active killing of patients at their request under certain circumstances. And they can't see what's wrong with it. I know people who work in that system who talk about how good it is to kill these people. Now, that is a remarkable cleft from the traditional Christian past. They can't see it anymore, though. They absolutely just can't see it. And it's causing other challenges because you will have traditional Christian churches
mm-hmm.
where they're trying as best they can to live a good Christian life and understanding things. Like you have maybe a traditional Roman Catholic parish, for example. But the culture is shifting, and the people don't necessarily understand the implications of the culture has shifted. An uncle who is attached to the church in some fashion has himself euthanized. The family then goes to the priest and asks for a burial. And the priest says, I can't do a Christian burial. Because they don't understand how the radical severing of the cleft between what the culture is pushing and what is traditionally Christian and what the church can understand.
It's awful to think about. And I'm really glad that you touched on the fact that we really have had some bad thinkers who've got a tremendous foothold in the societal epistemology today. So Kant with a very utilitarian morality and Hegel and Nietzsche destroying a transcendental worldview. Please speak to, so many of our listeners can recognize these names, but please speak to the sheer impact the poor thought of these men had in the way man in society thinks today.
So if you go back in time and you look at the history of philosophical arguments and ideas and epistemology. Mm-hmm. What you find is, again and again, the philosophers from Plato and Aristotle forward reference God as a way of talking about knowledge of reality in itself. If you wanted to know what was morally correct, you asked, how does God see it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That was their foothold. doesn't necessarily mean that Plato and Aristotle and others really believed in God, and it surely wasn't the Christian God, but they understood they had to see things in a careful way and to know how God saw the universe was a way of explaining that to people. You come forward in time, you see that again and again until you get to David Hume, mm-hmm. and David Hume says, there's no God, therefore we can't know these things. In then comes Kant, who kind of tries to play it as if there is a God and tries to bring back some forms of a Western Protestant understanding until you get to Hegel in 1802, says culture acts as if there's no God.
Yep.
It's not important anymore. And they begin to shift radically how they think about moral issues.
Let's pause there, Mark. My guest is Dr. Mark Cherry, author of most recently Bioethics After God, Morality, Culture, and Medicine, which is what we're talking about today. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Life's uncertainties can arise without warning, and without a clear legal plan, your wishes may go unfulfilled. Through our partnership with mycatholicwill.com/ave, you can designate guardians for your children and allocate your assets to the individuals and causes you hold dear. Create your will at no cost from the privacy of your home. This Thanksgiving, take time to prioritize your family's peace of mind. mycatholicwill.com/ave.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
Father Benedict Rochelle.
There are legitimate differences of opinion in any religion. There are differences of opinion in Catholicism. But in Catholicism, you expect that people will take the teaching of its supreme authority seriously. To go diametrically opposed to those teachings is to not be a Catholic. Someone in the name of Catholicism is sponsoring the destruction of human life. Lives of unborn children. And he got the name Catholic on the door. The highest authority in Catholicism and the encyclical Humanae Vitae, Evangelium Vitae, is absolutely clear that no Catholic can support abortion and that Catholics are responsible to take serious action against legalized abortion.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popcheck.
We'd all love to do more to spread the gospel, but where do you start? One simple way is through the Ministry of Hospitality. People need places to experience godly fun and fellowship. Let your home be that place. Make your home the welcoming place the neighborhood kids like to hang out. Be the family that organizes the annual block party. Invite people over once a month for a meal or game night or other activity where you can build relationships and spread a little joy. Evangelization is all about creating connection and letting people experience the difference God's grace makes in our lives. By letting people experience how God's love is lived out in your family, you're sharing the gospel in a subtle but powerful way. To discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life, check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mark Speed. I'm speaking with Dr. Mark Cherry, author, most recently, of Bioethics After God, Morality, Culture, and Medicine. Mark, I want to pick up where we left off as you were just beginning to tell us about where Hegel comes along and effectively says there is no God, and so the real way to view truth is via this means of a polemical dialectic. Just pick up from there and help us understand how that impacts the way modern man thinks about truth and morality.
What Hegel recognizes is that culture and politics are no longer looking to God for guidance in a strict sense. Instead, they've radically turned it into this world set of issues. And so what happens is the culture just changes. Instead of thinking about truth as something that has to track how God sees it, especially in morality, truth is what we see in the culture, what we decide works politically, or what we ourselves, individuals, choose. So think again about issues in bioethics. The culture affirms delaying marriage, engaging in all kinds of premarital sex, postponing having children so that at that point you need medical assistance to have a child.
Right, right.
All of these come in. We now have ever more use of surrogate mothers. And you sort of ask people, is this good? Is this bad? And instead of talking about in itself good or bad, they say, well, it's good for me or it's bad for me, rather than saying this is how we know God would command. So think of the abortion discussion again. So often people say, well, I wouldn't do it, but if others do it, it's okay. That's a radical shifting of a conversation. Same for euthanasia, same for other forms of medical technology. Think of developments now to have things like human cloning. Again, an immense shift in thinking about, well, I could reproduce all by myself, which is a total shift away from the way the fathers and the traditional Christian church understood the necessity of reproduction within marriage of men and women.
Mm-hmm. And that's precisely why it really is horrifying to think about the devolution of moral issues. But then when you take a look at how healthcare has been done, especially by large institutions, it's also why when it comes to diagnosing healthcare problems, as you've rightly noted, we can't seem to land on objective diagnoses anymore. So issues like transgenderism, even homosexuality, pedophilia, they've gone through an evolution of paradigm because there's no consensus on morality.
That's right. Morality, moral culture, has to come from somewhere. You have to have a content, and the content must come from somewhere. If it's no longer coming from our understanding of who God is and how he commands, such as you would find amongst the traditional Christians, the traditional Jews, or the traditional Muslims, just to give three examples. Mm-hmm. If it's just coming from culture, well, culture changes from place to place and time to time. Or if it just comes to me as an individual, I play my role as my own God, then we don't have one set of standards that we're governing. We don't even have particular places that are just Christian places. Instead, we have this culture that has been totally devolved into individual understandings of how things should be. And it's rewriting that's why the culture is rewriting marriage, rewriting child rearing, rewriting how we should engage in medicine, all of these things, missing central elements of Christian anthropology and traditional understandings of Christian good.
How much has all of this been exacerbated by the unfortunate decline, even amongst church hierarchy and church teachers, moral theologians, in espousing anywhere from a proportionalist to a full-blown relativistic and progressivist moral worldview?
Well, it depends on which group we're speaking of. Mm. But as I discuss in the book, one of the real challenges in, let's say, moral theology is large numbers of people who hold themselves out as moral theologians are really engaging in what I call weak theology.
Yep.
They're no longer thinking about who God is and how he commands and how to keep us in line with the tradition. Instead, they are thinking about, well, how best do I create in this world what I think of as good? And so they're shifting towards politics, they're shifting right. towards other understandings, and thereby undermining what's really taking place. Insofar as hierarchy shift, as bishops and cardinals and others aren't speaking the truth as they ought to, that leads to even more problems, because then they're not really showing how one, in fact, ought to live as part of the traditional Christian church.
Considering that, and the unfortunate failure of many moral theologians to adhere to classical truth, you know, truth as it has been handed down, you look at the papacies of especially John Paul II and then Benedict XVI in attempting to create a kind of rectification of that course. Were they successful? I want to hear your input here in aiding the conversation to be steered rightly back to classical anthropology and divine revelation.
So the cardinal element of Christian anthropology, that we must always remember, is that humans are created to worship God.
Mm-hmm.
Human morality must always be supportive of that principle, ontological characteristic. If moral analysis only inquires after human goods, focuses on equality, rights, justice, fairness, it's going to miss the boat when it comes to the depth of traditional Christian understandings. One of the critiques that I look at in the book with regard to, say, Pope John Paul II, is he kept wanting to talk about philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Not always, but routinely sort of pushes back to say we need more and better philosophy.
Right,
now, I'm
right.
a philosopher.
Yeah, he did this in Fides
I like being a philosopher. But reason won't get you there. If you want to know who God is, you have to talk to God himself. You have to pray rightly.
Right.
You must fast rightly. You must focus correctly and orient rightly. Philosophy is good for many things. But if you think of your relationship with God kind of like a relationship with your spouse, which I'll understand is a very limited analogy. If all I did was sit and think as a good philosopher about my wife, I'm not going to be married very long. It'll be a total collapse fast. The only thing that works is to go talk to my wife. I have to have that actual conversation. I have to orient towards her. That's what makes marriage last.
Right.
Insofar as I want to know who God is, I must pray rightly. I must fast rightly. I must stand in the right place and face the right direction on a routine basis and come to know the God who is. That's that cardinal element of Christian anthropology, and Christian morality is all about that, right? If you take that and you put it back into medicine, that sense of medicine, then the if you go back to the fathers, they understood medicine is a gift from God, and its appropriate use is good. You see that in St. Basil, for example, Rule 55. He even talks about the control of pain and distress.
Mm-hmm.
Good. But he's always very clear. Medicine should never replace faith in God. And it should never become an all-consuming endeavor for the patient or the patient's family. Must turn, keep this life and medicine from being idols, and instead always turn back to God. And philosophy just isn't the right way to do that. One has to use philosophy for appropriate things, but also always orient and have that very careful relationship with God himself.
And so one of the things that you're therefore highlighting, and it comes out in your book as well, especially in the chapter on weak bioethics, is that it's not just that we have a problem of medical care professionals who are not thinking rightly, but we can almost rest on the fact that they're simply not praying. And so this is not just a worldview problem. There's a fundamental ethos that's at issue here.
That's right. So that when you shift your epistemology outside of a traditional Christian understanding of standing rightly and praying rightly. And you begin to think of things like the good in earthly terms and in terms of what reason can show, you run into real problems. I'll just give you a couple of simple examples. Think of beneficence, do good. The challenge is in a secular society like ours, with the immense different religions and cultural practices that are here, we cannot even understand beneficence as the golden rule.
Mm-hmm.
Do unto others as you have them do unto you. I like Texas barbecue. But if I offer Texas barbecue to a vegan animal rights activist, doing unto them as I would have them do unto me, they do not experience it as a form of kindness. They experience it as a form of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, because they're living in a radically different world, they're thinking of the world in very different ways, they simply can't experience or see what needs to be seen properly. Take that simple analogy and bring it back to medicine. Doctors and nurses and others are being educated in this very secular culture.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't understand that often what they're offering is something that a traditional Christian would say, that's horrible.
Right,
why would
right,
you
right.
offer such a thing? They can't even see it. So it's not even necessarily that I'm suggesting that they're trying to do things which are problematic. Some might be, but routinely they just don't know. They don't understand the nature of sin anymore. All of that's been lost from so much of our culture.
Mark, truly, thank you so much. We've run out of time in the segment, but I'm looking forward to future conversations with you. Thank you for your time.
Be very happy to chat again sometime. Thank you so much for your kindness.
My guest has been Dr. Mark Cherry, author most recently of Bioethics After God, Morality, Culture, and Medicine. We've been talking about that book published by Notre Dame Press. Please do procure a copy of it. It's an insightful book. It's a systematic read, and it presents us very clearly the issues of how we got to where we are, but also solutions, how we can move forward. And believe it or not, Catholics, it's incumbent upon us to become the solution. I'm Marcus Peter.